if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system.
Greetings, welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 281. It's our 2023 Shriners Children's Open and Open d'Espagne Bets Pod. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selection for this week's PGA and DP World Tour action. Good morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamblerware. You can visit begamblerware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website where we have in-depth betting previews for both events. We've got strokes gained rankings for both events, course form stats combined with current form stats, plus of course, our brand new predictor models. All of our content at Golf Betting System, like this podcast, it's all completely free of charge. There's no paywall. On X, you can follow Barry at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available, along with my weekly golf betting show. Can I just say to listeners, come across to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel. That'd be great. We've got a drive on for subscribers. So if you could come across, there's my golf betting show each week for all the PGA Tour action. And this podcast is also available on the channel. So come across. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, and we'll read them out at the start of a future show, leave your name and where you are in the review. Right, before I start, Barry, we didn't get a review from Ireland again last week. Can you have a word with somebody? We need a five-star review from Ireland. It's essential. What can you do?
Okay, I'll see. I mean, this has just sprung on me. I'll try and manifest one or two, Steve.
I like springing things on you. 181 we've got from the US, 170 from the UK, and I know that Ireland's got a smaller population. We've only got 42 from Ireland. Come on, people of the Emerald Island, send over a five-star review, please.
I think per capita we're absolutely smashing it there, Steve.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, we'll work on it.
I'll work with that one. Right, now this review here, it's from Andy, and he is in Louisville, Kentucky. Now that is Justin Thomas country right there. It's entitled Love It, 5 stars. It's the Golf Betting System, the Golf Betting System podcast. In brackets, hoping Steve sings this part on the podcast, lots of laughs. Close brackets. Good theme song, great information, stays on my weekly podcast rotation at work. Keep up the good work, chaps. It was a pleasure, Andy. Thanks for your 5-star review. What do you think, guys?
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, I'm not sure Sam needs to give up the day job, really, does he?
Not really. He dared me to sing it, so I did.
Yeah. Very good.
I've always said whatever's written, I will read or sing in this context.
there's a challenge to everybody. Oh, that's going to be fun. Can't wait for the tongue twister Steve's going to get.
That is a dangerous statement.
That 5-star review kind of follows on to last week's golfing action. I mean, when you've got Luke List winning a putting contest at the Sanderson Farms Championship, gaining 1.5 strokes per round with a flat stick, you know the world has gone crazy.
Mm.
What is it with these terrible putters like Lucas Glover and now Luke List? They've started to see someone that can teach them how to putt and they're winning PGA Tour events.
Yeah, it's contagious. Nailing a 45-footer in the playoff to do it as well. Mm. What can you do?
I felt a bit sorry for Ben Griffin, actually.
Yeah.
To be fair, I was kicking myself from Friday that I hadn't picked him because in my analysis, he was exactly the kind of player that I needed to pick. He'd been good with his putting the previous outing. He'd finished in the top 20 in his previous outing. But the thing that put me off him was that his previous outing had been way, way, way back. at the St. Jude Championship, and I'm thinking that huge gap between last playing and winning just doesn't happen. Mm. And lo and behold, he was way ahead even at the halfway stage, wasn't he? I'm like, oh, Steve, you should have picked him. Should have picked him. And it all ground to a halt on the Sunday, didn't it, for Ben?
Yeah, the finish was reminiscent of a DP World Tour event, really, with
no one, potato.
No one Mark really Hubbard
doubling both of the 17 and 18 to miss out on to make it a six-man playoff.
Yeah, well, this is it. It's, you know, we know it's hard to win, but yeah, Griffin will be disappointed without a couple of late bogeys, and you know, the driver just wasn't his friend at the end. Which, yeah, when push comes to shove, you just need to be able to execute some of those shots. Still had a putt at the end, didn't need to take it outright, but yeah, not good enough. Yeah, Luke List, put him in the playoff, and if you can nail a putt like that, then good luck to you. Broke everyone's hearts.
That's why I still struggle with some of these players that just don't play these events. I mean, Luke List there, he's come from being outside the top 125, even though he did have a win exemption from last year, so he's not panicking about that. But all of a sudden, he's now got a spot at next year's Masters. And he's playing this Champions event at the start of 2024 down at Plantation in Hawaii. Yeah. This 1 week on the PGA Tour can earn you a pocket full of dollars. Well, sorry, a bucket full of dollars, and just change your whole momentum for a year.
I suppose you'll get into some of the signature events as well, won't he? From that, there's lots of perks, isn't there?
There's lots of perks, and a lot of these guys just I'm going to take a few weeks off. Mm. So I suppose it's everyone's priority, isn't it? That was the action over in the States. What did we make of Scotland?
Was it messy, wasn't it? I mean, absolutely biblical amounts of rain falling in that part of Scotland over the weekend. And you'd have seen as well as I did the pictures of Carnoustie late on Sunday afternoon, and you know, the assertion that if they could get it playable by 11:30 on Monday, then they would play. And you know, I looked at the pictures, and my knee jerk reaction was, well, that's it, it's done, because the course is in such a state. The course is underwater, and how the green staff there managed to get it into any kind of position to actually play, that's just a revelation, really. It wasn't perfect, and I've seen some gripes about it since on social media, but you know, at the point they were trying to finish the event, however they managed to do it, was the priority number one. And there's so many points on offer for that event. You know, it's an important point in the season as well. So,
who did you see griping?
Who was it? It was Tom McKibben's dad or something like that. Someone posted some pictures, and there were bunkers full of water. And
oh, get a life!
You know, everyone had to play the same.
Read the room.
It's you know, and ultimately they managed to get it done, and because of the way that it worked through. Those players who were playing one of the two easier courses on the third and final day on Monday had the advantage, and Matt Fitzpatrick was playing St Andrews. He was already a shot up, and once it was announced that he was, then it was being cut down to 54 holes. That was it. He was the long odds-on favourite, and duly converted in the end, not without a scare, but you know, in the end, it was he got himself quite comfortably over the line. And there was absolutely no love for Fitzpatrick or Fleetwood before the event. And, you know, I guess everyone had come to the same kind of conclusion that these Ryder Cup boys were, you know, after the partying and the exhilaration of the Ryder Cup, were going to struggle to lift themselves. But Fitzpatrick did. He got himself there. Perhaps the weekend of no action actually helped galvanise him for the final day. One big effort. Mm.
I think there was another little aspect I was just, you know, pondering on after the event, like why did somebody win? Try figure it out to maybe help for future decisions. Mm. Again, there's like that just that emotional state and emotional like situation that a golfer has in any given week, and like, everybody has one. But there was just one that playing with his mum. There's just that extra little level there that, you know, if you knew about that, if you know about that in advance and you take a bit of time to consider it, then it could tilt you into, could be the factor that tilts you into making a bet on him. But I mean, historically, players after Ryder Cup and President's Cup, it's hard for them to last all week. I mean, that's without having facts in front of me, but it just feels like there's always a bit of a drop off. Steve will have something to back me up here, I hope, rather than just let me hang out. But
I think it can work both ways, but it'd be interesting to just delve into what happened post 2018, the Golf National. You might see a whole stream of European team members that actually went on and won.
Yeah, not necessarily.
Don't know. It can work both ways.
You can. We've seen Ryder Cuppers go and win the following event, and you know, there's different ways to look at it, isn't there? Ultimately, Fitzpatrick was pretty friendless in the market, but it got to the point where, you know, three rounds probably suited him. Had it been four consecutive rounds and they'd have gone out and played really two really tough rounds in the rain over the weekend, perhaps it would have been a different story, but there was too much rain for that to happen. So it is what it is. Matt Wallace was the only shining light for me. He actually finished off quite nicely at Carnoustie and got into a tie for sixth with three others. So did manage to get a skinny profit on the week in the end, which was nice. Having looked at the way that everything was panning out and rather hoping that the event was going to be cancelled on Sunday, because that would have been potentially a better situation.
He needed a couple of birdies in the last three holes, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
Did that.
Yeah, right. I think he birdied three of the last four, something like that.
Well done.
That showed a bit of bit of fortitude from Matt, so... Good for him. Playing some nice stuff, Matt Wallace.
He's now caught a private jet, I expect, and he'll be in Las Vegas on Tuesday.
Yeah, he's off to Vegas.
Let's talk about this week, shall we? We've got two events. We've clearly got the John Rahm Open down in Madrid. We'll cover that second. Paul's been working all through the night to get his selections done. For an event that's been totally screwed by the Monday finish at St Andrews and up in Scotland. In terms of best bookmaker, though, for the 2023 Shriners Children's Open, we're highlighting Bet365. As ever, they have their each-way extra market available, which gives you the option to increase or decrease the number of places when you are betting pre-event on the Shriners outright market. I've used their 8 places each way at 50 odds on a number of my selections this week, which I put up yesterday, Monday. Right now, as we record the pod, they're offering extended market best odds and 8 places each way on market leaders such as Cam Davis is 22-1. We've got a triumvirate of Tom Hoagie, who's been well backed, Adam Schenck and JJ Spawn at 33-1. Adam Hadwin, if you want a horse for a course, it's Hadwin. And Ryder Cup hero Nikolai Højgaard at 40-1 each. Or what about friend of the podcast, especially friend of Paul Williams, Ches Reavy? He's 140-1. 8 places each way with Bet365. 90-1 with Paddy Power. We recommend Bet365. If you're 18 plus and do not have a Bet365 sports account, you can find details of their current bet £10, get £30 in free bets, new customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's in this podcast description. Don't forget to use the bonus code SPORT30, SPORT30 when registering. So yes, the Shriners Open. I always like this event. It's normally well supported. But as we have seen with this PGA Tour fall, which is unique in the fact that there isn't a great deal to play for the big names, they're all pretty much putting their feet up. So this is an event where Tiger Woods, Jim Furyk twice, Kevin Na twice, Webb Simpson, Patrick Cantlay, Bryson DeChambeau, we've got Sung Jae-im and Tom Kim have all won this. I mean, that's not a bad winners champions list, is it? Right there. It's not a stellar field. There's a better field next week at the Zozo over in Japan. I think Xander's playing that. Colin Morikawa's definitely playing it. Ricky's playing it. Of course, Keegan Bradley will be defending. So it's a decent field over in Japan. A lot of what I would classify as the lesser names are playing Shriners and then hopping on, clearly, the charter flight to take them to Japan. But all in all, it's not the strongest Shriners field I've ever seen. It's worth highlighting, though, and this is going to get a lot of coverage. LPGA star Lexi Thompson, fresh from her Solheim Cup appearance, is in the Shriners field. So that'll be interesting to see what Lexi can produce from the back tees this week at the Shriners. What do you think to that, chap? Just as a... I can't see any harm in it. I think it'll be interesting to see how a top quality player like Lexi Thompson can get on.
Yeah. Was it Michelle Wee who played before in one of the events?
Annika Starenstam. Yeah, it's not the first time.
No.
I think it's like the fourth or fifth. But...
Yeah.
It's just tough, isn't it? Because she'll be playing off the same tees as the guys. So that's where the disadvantage will be in that respect. But good luck to her.
One thing in her favour, though, here is we're playing at altitude. 7,255-yard golf course. It plays sub-7. I classify it as resort-level scoring. I mean, 23-under tends to be the required target. It's at altitude. It's a desert golf course, clearly, because it's in Las Vegas, Nevada. And, you know, amazingly enough, I categorise it as short in terms of its length. The course is TPC Summerlin. It's a par 71. It features four holes with water hazards. Fairways are Bandera Bermuda grass. Rough is 419 Bermuda grass, 2.25 inches. So actually a little bit more depth than last week down in Mississippi. The greens here, though, are large. 7,400 square feet. They feature Dominator bent grass. This was one thing that came out after the start of tournament week last year. They actually have regrassed the whole golf course. So all of the Bermuda grass is different. And the greens have changed from A1, A4 bent grass to Dominator. So that was in place for last year, but no one knew pre-event that had actually happened. It's all technical details, really. But this is a rarity. It's a Bermuda-grassed golf course that has bent grass putting surfaces. The only other regular stop-off on the PGA Tour that has a similar agronomy, Colonial Country Club down in Texas, where they play the Charles Schwab Challenge. Just a little intricacy there. I mean, and actually, Kevin Na. We know for a fact that Kevin's won both at Colonial and, of course, he's won here twice. So something potentially to look in if you're looking at correlating golf courses. Not only is it short, but it's particularly wide as well. 33 yards wide at 300-yard carry off the tee. All of the par fives, and there's three of them, are reachable to the whole field. And that doesn't happen that much when it comes to the PGA Tour. If you want players that are regular or are Vegas-based, I might have missed a few, but here's a list. Doug Gim, Harry Hall. How did someone from Cornwall end up living in Las Vegas? Anyway, Charlie Hoffman, David Lipsky, Taylor Montgomery, Ryan Moore, Scott Piercy, Justin Suh, Nick Watney, all live in Las Vegas and in this field. Jimmy Walker's a regular visitor as well because he's often training at the Las Vegas Training Centre of the Harmons. He's playing better golf now, Jimmy Walker. His approach is off tee play is fantastic at the moment. He seems to have found the driver. The approach play not so good, but there's something stirring with Jimmy Walker. And we know for a fact he does play well at the West Coast.
Does,
yeah. It tends to be his best hunting grounds. So basically, whether it's going to be Astrodome kind of golf, as you would expect in Vegas, very little wind. One noticeable thing I did just stumble upon, it looks like it's going to be 4 to 5 degrees cooler than last year. We were looking at temperatures over the 30 degrees Celsius last year. This is going to be more comfortable. I think the first opening 2 days, 22 degrees, and then it just warms up 26, 27 over the weekend. I know my North American friends will be saying to me, what's that in Fahrenheit? So 72 to 81 Fahrenheit. I don't think it's going to do much in terms of scoring. I still think it's going to be a 21 to 22 under par wins this. What are we looking for? Difficult to tell, because I tell you what, the way that Luke List won last week at the Sanderson Farms was completely different to what normally happens there. But if anything as per normal happens here, what you've got to do is find tons and tons of fairways. There is definitely a very rare occurrence here when you look at historic statistics. And I'm going all the way back to Jonathan Bird in 2010. Driving accuracy actually matters here. You go through all of the winners, where they ranked for driving accuracy that week, average it through, 12th in the field. Now, you rarely see that on the PGA Tour. So, for me, I always avoid players that are wide off the tee. Because I think eventually it's going to catch up with you and you just can't hit the ball and create enough chances on a regular basis to make the score that you're going to need to actually win this if you're often in 2.25 inch Bermuda grass rough, or even worse, stuck behind a cactus plant in some kind of desert wasteland or in the water. So I'm always looking for plotters, Paul. You love picking plotters. This is a plotters golf course.
Yeah.
And then that's why we were on Tom Kim last year. Because Tom Kim, guess what? He's straight off the tee. He's more than long enough. And he's got a fantastic approach play. And all you needed last year with Tom was for him to actually make some putts. And lo and behold, all of a sudden, on bent grass greens, started making some putts. And made a copious amount of birdies and eagles. Quite simple when you boil it all down. It's just picking the right players, isn't it?
Yep.
First player on my list. To me, he slept wall. He basically sleepwalked into a playoff last week, and that's how good this guy is. Ludvig Åberg. I'm on. 3 points each way. I managed to snag 14-1 yesterday with Bet365 on their each way extra facility 8 places on Ludvig Åberg. And I know for a fact, because you messaged me with glee yesterday morning, Paul, that you had got William Hill's first show of 18-1 on Ludvig Åberg.
It's one of those, isn't it, where if you've got a target for a particular player and the first show looks out of kilter, then I think you just got to take it. And yeah, I was expecting 14s. And as you say, Ludvig opened at 18s with Hills and it lasted 18 minutes, I think it was. So I managed to snare that. And yeah, it's, you know, a relatively chunky punt for me this week on Ludvig. But yeah, I'm with you, Steve. You know, a generational talent, as he's been described, and I think we've just got to embrace it. The guy flew straight over from the Ryder Cup, as you said, kind of after a few days of kind of meandering about on the fringes of contention, got himself into the mix on Sunday, into the playoff, and, you know, had Luke List not nailed that putt, who knows, he could have gone and won. And, you know, should he win, he's got, there's some big carrots, aren't there, for these players, right, this end of the season. You've articulated a few already, but if he finishes inside the top 125, then he's going to get into the Players' Championship. There's signature events up for grabs as well. And as you said, if he can get himself a win, then it's Masters invite, century tournament champions. These are the kind of events that Ludwig should be playing in. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him win this week.
His status means that he would be playing PGA Tour or whatever, because he got the first ever amateur champion. Is it kind of an amateur champion pass into the PGA Tour?
Yeah, that's right.
But what these things are doing are getting him to that top 125, which means he can then play the Players' Championship, gets a start there. More importantly, of course, a win would get him into the Masters. And don't forget, he's not a million miles away now from top 50 in the world.
No.
We know what doors that opens as well.
Mm.
So he's got still a lot to play for. And I did look with these kind of... If I'm working back in my mind, I always think of the triumvirate that came out, which was Morikawa, it was Victor Hovland, and it was Matthew Wolff. And that would have been 2018, I believe, when they all came out of college at the same time to play the PGA Tour. And they all hit their straps pretty quickly. And I remember Hovland's first victory, I believe, was in Puerto Rico. And when he won that in Puerto Rico, he won that. I'm just digging here, chaps. He was 12-1 favourite winning the Puerto Rico Open, right? His first PGA Tour title. Colin Morikawa, he won the Barracuda Championship. That was his first PGA Tour title. Lo and behold, he won that at 12-1 favourite. And this is what you tend to see with these guys. They'll win something, and they'll win something at a very suppressed price point. I think the only one that shocked was Matthew Wolff, because I think it was only his third outing when he won the 3M Open, and he won something like 150-1. John Rahm, his first PGA Tour victory, if you remember, was the Farmers Insurance Open, and he won that at 55s in clearly a field that was loaded. But I just think sometimes you've got to look at these things and you've got to say, do you know what? And I was backing Oberg when he was at 33s, 40s earlier in the season, going, these prices aren't going to last. They haven't lasted for obvious reasons. I just think Oberg, it feels kind of Tom King from last year. The only thing that dampened it was the fact that he did sleepwalk last week into a playoff. Could have done with him finishing like 20th or something and going, oh yeah, it was the jet lag. He'll be all right this week. The thing that scares people with Ludwig is he's so good off the tee. He's so powerful. And get this, if his stats were actually ranking on the PGA Tour statistics, he'd be 45th for driving accuracy, which is scary for the guy's distance. And he would be 5th for scoring average. That's the kind of player you're dealing with here.
Yeah.
He is pure quality. So he's straight enough to win around here, and he makes enough birdies to win around here.
Mm.
The other thing I did notice, and I had a little dig. This might not be out there, but I had a little dig into Ludwig. He attended Texas Tech University. Now, that is in a place called Lubbock, which is in Texas, amazingly enough. I believe that's where Sean O'Hare grew up, going back. Now, their college golf course is a golf course that features bent grass greens, and Lubbock itself is at 3,200 feet above sea level. So he's used to playing golf at altitude, on a home golf course at college that was bent grass greens, yeah? And guess where he won his first DP World Tour title? At Kranz, at the Amiga European Masters.
Yeah, yeah.
That's quite a high golf course.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So I could try and persuade myself to say, well, you know what, he hasn't got any course experience. How's he going to get on with the altitude? Da, 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 da. And you know what it's like. You persuade yourself out of something. Well, actually, it all kind of stacks up. I think he's going to love this golf course.
Mm.
And we said exactly the same about Tom Kim last year. It's just a shame there isn't a Patrick Cantlay or a couple of the usual star names that aren't in the field, which would have boosted Ludwig closer to 20-1. But hey-ho, we've got what we've got. So I'm on Ludwig, 3 points each way. You're on him as well, Paul, and you managed to grab that 18-1, so well done for you. Have you got any interest in... Do you follow that, Barry? Is that anything that rings a bell with you in terms of that this could be his breakthrough victory?
It's very convincing.
It's just a crap price.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was the one that always says, don't be price proud, a win is a win. And I haven't been... I haven't backed him consistently like you have, so I'm not feeling completely exposed or, you know, desperate for that win. So, yeah, actually, it's be a nice win-only bet to put on. I wouldn't bother with each way and that for me, but no. I'll make it a podcast trifecta.
Okay, well done. I don't forget, I was the whisperer that said that Ricky would win in Detroit at a ridiculously short 14-1, and he did. So yeah. Sometimes you just got to say, oh, well, I'm just getting stuck in.
Yeah.
I mean, a 14-1 winner is better than, you know, not a 14-1 winner, like, to be. But
yes, absolutely. Next up for me, Siwoo Kim. I've been burnt with Siwoo many, many times. But actually, you look at what you need around here. This year on tour, 7th for driving accuracy, 27th for scoring average. He's in the top 40 in the world rankings. So he could do with something just to cement that spot so that he gets his Masters invite for Christmas. And lo and behold, we see Siwoo. I think the last three outings here, he's finished 8th, missed cut 8th, which is Siwoo. Did make the Tour Championship this year, which is only the second time Siwoo Kim has made the top 30 on the PGA Tour. So he must be coming in here with a bit of pep in his stride. Finished very, very well at Tour Championship, actually. I think it was a 68-65 finish. He was in the top 10 for scoring both of the Saturday-Sunday rounds. And then, of course, big pressure. Goes to the Asian Games with Sungjae Im. And yeah, the thought of having to play to actually avoid, is it 3 years of military service that they have to do?
Might be a couple of years, but yeah.
It's 21 months, 21 months it, yeah. Of military service. And they pulled it off.
Mm.
They won the gold medal. Now, that's going to do one of two things with Siwoo, and that's why I've kind of kept the stake down. I've gone 1.5 points each way, 25-1 with Bet365, 8 places each way. Because you never know with him, and you will find out quickly with Siwoo. He'll either eject immediately on Thursday or actually pull together some decent play. He was actually first-round leader here last year. I'm hoping that it just boosts him and kind of just releases all of that pressure. And, you know, he's thinking, oh, you know, all of a sudden, I can go out there now and actually win PGA Tour titles rather than winning about the fact that, or worrying about the fact that I've got a Sangmun Bae kind of sentence coming towards me, 21 months of military service. And that must be such a relief for these guys. Mm. You actually look at where he's won, it's crazy, really. Sedgefield, Sawgrass, PGA West, Wailea Country Club. Those are his four PGA Tour victories. They are all short golf courses featuring Bermuda grass. Those wins at Sedgefield, PGA West and Wailea came at 21 under, 23 under and 18 under par. Short, scorable, Bermuda grass. That's what he likes. Yes, I know the greens are bent grass. The rest of the course is Bermuda. And he just likes the place, gets on with it. So he made logical sense for me at 25-1. My other two chances are above 40. So are there any players that you want to interject with?
No, I've only got one other, 80-1 that is, so I can do that in a sec if you like.
What about you, Baron? Are you still choosing?
No, I'm way deeper.
Okay, that's great.
Another player
that can really pick himself around a golf course is Andrew Putnam. He's one of these players, he's Ches Reavie-esque, he's Kevin Na-esque, that Putnam pops up on the shorter, we've always said there's this micro PGA Tour, isn't there, of short golf courses. Kevin Kisner excels at some of those when he's on form. Mm. It's that kind of, it's Siwoo Kim. these kind of players that pop up on short affairs where you don't need to be overly long off the tee. And Putnam is one of those. He's in the top 60 in the world. He actually finished last year by, he actually finished the FedEx Cup series with a 10th at the BMW Championship. And we know that that was top 50, full of high quality players. He finished second at the Zozo Championship last October, which again, sub 7,000 yard, bent grass, green golf course, tree lined. He's also got a great desert record. His only PGA Tour victory was at the Barracuda in 2018. He's also finished second at the Barracuda. You just look at his Californian his desert form in general. He can pick his way around these golf courses. He missed the cut last time out of the Fortinet, but I don't mind that because actually he played some competitive golf. So yeah, I'm in on Putnam, who's finished 18th, 11th and 12th here since 2019. Just think, he's the kind of guy that could just have a nice little run over the next few tournaments and just slip into the top 50 almost unannounced and get himself a nice Masters invite for Christmas. So that's Andrew Putnam, 1.5 points each way, 45-1 with William Hill, 8 places each way. People are going to be shouting down the pipe at me, why didn't you pick Tom Hoagie, Steve? You were on him last week. You're a Tom Hoagie fan. Why didn't you pick Tom Hoagie? He was also last week 7th for tee to green and 5th for approach at the Sanderson Farms. Played all right, Tom. I was on him. Didn't really let me down. Just couldn't quite get close enough. Threw in a crazy double on Saturday, which annoyed the hell out of me. When he was, I think, 6 under par and flying. I looked at Tom Hoagie closely, as you would have. Do you know what? In his whole career on the PGA Tour, he has never gone back to a golf course and backed up a top 10 finish the year before with another top 10 finish. And I just thought, that's enough for me. There's something in that. He just doesn't seem to go back to a course where he had success the previous year and back it up with another very good performance. So I'm not on Tom.
No, bit of expectation.
You do see that with players. You see a lot of players that can't back up a top 10 with a top 10 the week after. And you do see players that literally had some great success. I was on Tom Hoagie here last year, if you remember. Because I had Tom and I had both the Toms. I had Tom Hoagie got each way. And I had Tom Kim. So Tom was at the top of my list. And when I'm looking into it and finding that, I'm like, maybe not. The one I've actually selected at 55-1 is Davis Thompson. Young talent. I was on him at the Fortinet. He was second this year at the American Express, which is a short par 72 desert golf in California. He's just playing some really, really good stuff under the surface. 5 top 31 finishes in his last 6 outings, Davis Thompson. And we know he's a prestigious driver of the golf ball. He's pretty straight. And all of a sudden, the approach play clicked last week. 5th for off the tee, 15th for approach, 13th for tee to green last week. I'm just hoping he comes back to a course where he finished 12th last year and just keeps that forward momentum going. So Davis Thompson, 55-1 with William Hill, 8 each way, was my final selection, a point each way. Right, over to you guys. Paul.
Yeah, the only other one I've backed, I'm just keeping the faith with Matt Wallace, 80-1. 6th last week, as we said. And he's had to jump straight over on a plane to Vegas. Whether that will influence how he plays, I'm not sure. Perhaps he'll just turn up with very little expectation in that respect and hit the ground running. He's played here twice, actually. And from the 2 attempts, he's shot all 8 rounds in the 60s, finished 14th and 28th. So 2 kind of strong enough performances to suggest that he can play the course all right. 6 under par at Carnoustie on Sunday, or Monday rather, yesterday. So that suggests that his long game is in a decent enough place as well. So yeah, I think he could keep the momentum going and play well this week. Matt Wallace at 80s. But yeah, other than Auberg, that's the only bet I'm having in Vegas this week.
Barry.
I should have put a disclaimer at this time of year for my bets. I seem to lose the plot altogether in terms of just being able to figure out what to back. Last week was fantastic because by Thursday lunchtime, everything I had backed was out of the running. So, I was just able to watch a bit of the golf and just enjoy it for actually watching it rather than sweating bets. I'm just going to take a couple of just long odds punts, very small stakes, just to have a little bit of an interest. Going to go with Joel Damon. Thirteenth last week, and it's courses that ask for a lot of driving accuracy are ones that he can show up on better than others. He's a ninth here 4 years ago.
I think two no putts in effect here. I did have a very close look at Joel Dane. So yeah. What price did you get?
125-1, eight nice. Places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then the other, this feels like a bad bet. Like it could be a bad bet because he's always felt like he's had enough talent to be, to win a couple of times out there, but just figures out a way to disappoint or to crushingly collapse as Eric Van Rooyen.
Mm. Sometimes you're a mind reader because he was the one player I was going to mention after this. Ridiculously good golf, Eric Van Rooyen.
I'm going to double my stakes down now. I mean, he's like, just look at these like last four events, 8th, 16th, 30th, and then a couple of weeks break and 16th last week. Now, his one time playing here was a couple of years ago with a missed cut. I had a look into that. Seemed like he was playing absolute garbage and just had a really poor week with the approach game, terrible around the greens. But that's not the kind of form he's in right now. He's popping all over the place on the predictor and then again in your stats tracking, Steve.
Yeah.
He's 10th tee to green, second on approach. And he is 8th in putting. Those are the ones that really stood out for me. And at 110-1, I kind of said, let's give it a whirl.
He's better than that. Well, he's not 8th for putting. That's Tom Kim. But he's 8th.
Oh, sorry.
Strokes.
Total.
His strokes gained current form, Barry, which is better, really, isn't it?
Sorry. Coffee's
so in the last 8 weeks, and this includes his DP World Tour outings, he's 8th in this field for current form strokes gained total. And don't forget, he won his PGA Tour title in the Californian desert at the Barracuda Championship.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Paul will tell you more, but I just had a quick glance at his Dubai, Abu Dhabi kind of desert form on the DP World Tour, and he's got some great results.
Yeah, and looking at his... I'm just thinking back to the stats when I was pulling them together yesterday for your predictor. I'm sure he topped the altitude stats as well. Is that right?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Certainly, he's had a
top five since he won the Barracuda as well.
Mm.
So yeah, I think that would be 7 points in my terminology on altitude courses.
Yeah. Certainly, lots of
those. I take it he's played well in South Africa, Joburg and all the places around there.
Here, do you want the top few for altitude? Robert Streb and Eric Van Rooyen are joined first. Then you have Laird and Reavy are next, followed by Webb Simpson, Wichi Rorenski, Scott Piercy, Hadwin, Tom Kim, Tom Hoagie. Tom Hoagie's there. This is... Steve, you're going to regret not backing Hoagie after all you said. You should just put a little saver on him.
Yeah, I know. Davis Thompson will miss the cut and Tom Hoagie will finish tie for second. I get that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I love Eric Van Rooyen as well. Everyone will be going, well, why didn't you just tip him up today? The only one little bit I don't like about Eric is his weakness is spraying it off the tee. But it doesn't mean that he can't compete around it. So, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned him.
I hope I will be too.
The other thing I was going to quickly say, I'm just going back through winners here. Tom Kim, 25-1 last year. I got him at 22-1, eight places with 365. Sung Jae Im, 33-1. Laird was way out there at 225. Kevin Na, 70-1. DeChambeau, 14-1. You look at that DeChambeau price for me, 14-1, and you think to yourself, it's amazing how sort of time can be a healer. I'd have thought at the time, everyone had gone, I'm not backing Bryson DeChambeau at 14-1. That was the time, remember, that he'd won two playoff events in the summer, back-to-back. And that just, again, it pulls me towards to Ludwig because he's won his first professional outing in Europe at altitude. He's played fantastically well to qualify for the team. Yeah. He then plays well at the Ryder Cup. In one team, he's 9-7 up on the world number one. He then flies across. He's going to be too tired to do anything on the PGA Tour. He finishes in a playoff. Yeah. A playoff. Sleepwalks into a playoff to almost capture his first PGA Tour title. And I just think 14-1 and 18-1 in your case, Paul. That's not a bad price, I think. If you were to look back at this in 5 years' time, go, oh yeah, do you remember when we picked up Ludwig? He was 14-1 and he was on an absolute tear before he became a world top elite, top 30 in the world player. You go, yeah, it all made sense, really. But anyway, right. That's enough of that. Paul, I know you've been burning the midnight hour. Well, both. I think both ends of the Wigan. You were working late last night. You were up at the crack of dawn this morning. Take us through the John Rahm Open over in Spain for us.
Yeah, off to sunny Spain. Hopefully it is sunny after the rain of St Andrews over the last couple of days. Got a couple of weeks in Spain, actually. Madrid this week, Andalucía next week, which is on a new track, of course. Valderrama went to LIV, didn't it? So next week is a different track, which is, it's not far. It's only a stone's throw from Valderrama, so I'd be interested to do that, a bit of analysis for that for next week. Anyway, this week, yes, Madrid, John Rahm is back to defend his title. And be looking for what was his fourth Spanish Open win in the space of just five starts, should he convert this week. Not surprisingly, Rahm's the standout clear favourite this week. 9-4 currently, the best price that we're getting. There's a bit of blue against his name as well, so I expect it will probably be 2-1 or maybe even shorter that he actually goes off on in terms of his price. By Thursday, so we're kind of venturing close to Tiger Woods' numbers, aren't we? Back in his pomp, but given what he's done here in the past and his relative strength compared to the rest of the field, it's no surprise, I don't think, that we're seeing that kind of price against him. Justin Rose 16-1, Yannick Paul 25-1, Joost Luiten 28-1. Adrian Nategi 30-1, Thorbjørn Olsen 33s, Romain Langasque, Jorge Campillo both 40-1, 50-1 bar those top players. So the field very, very quickly thins out this week. Ball Sports, Bet365 both got eight place each way, 1/5 options this week. So do check out their odds. Now we're playing at the Club de Campo Villa de Madrid. It's a 7,112-yard par 71. Essentially, it's a tree-lined style resort course. Wide fairways, small bent power greens, set up for low scoring. We've got some older form on the course. It used to be used for the Tour España Masters, the Open de Madrid. Madrid Masters going back just after the turn of the century. The most relevant form, though, if you're clicking or flicking through the stats this week, is from 2019 onwards for this particular event, which used this course in its current guise. It had a renovation after the last Madrid Masters. So what we have seen since 2019 onwards is what you should expect to see this week over in Madrid. Those events that have been played here then, 2019, John Rahm won 100-30, his price, 10-3, 22 under par. And he won by five shots back then in 2019. No event 2020 because of the coronavirus. 2021, Rafa Cabrera Bayo won 55-1, 19 under par. And then last year, John Rahm was back, 5-2 winner, 25 under par. He won by 6 shots. So when you see Rahm, 2 wins from 3 attempts on this course, 1 by 5 shots, 1 by 6 shots, it's no surprise that he is the absolute clear standout favourite for this week. The weather forecast looks fine, dry and sunny for the first couple of days, temperatures in the high 70s, a bit cooler and cloudier over the weekend, maybe the odd shower, very little wind. I'm expecting low scoring once again this week. Now, if you look into the stats, Rahm ranked first and second for putts per greens and regulation in his 2 wins. Rafa and his win was second for scrambling. The biggest correlation, though, if you're clicking through or searching through any of the data, all 3 of the Renaults saw strokes gained tee to green as the key stat. Rahm was first for strokes gained tee to green, both of his wins. Rafa was third for strokes gained tee to green. So for me, that's not a bad place to start. If you're doing some analysis on this week, strokes gained tee to green, you're going to need to putt. You're going to need to try and keep the card clean as well. So these are relatively small greens. So if you're missing greens, you're going to need to be able to get yourself up and down as well. So those are the numbers, or those are the metrics I would be most focused on, I think. Other than that, if you look at current form, if you widen it out to all of the Spanish Opens back to 2010, then each of the winners had a top 20 or better in one of their last 7 starts. Rahm in 2019 and Rafa in 2021, though, both of them have missed the cut on their previous start. So it suggests you don't need that smack you in the face immediate form. Course form might be a better indicator, though, even though we've only had 3 Renaults here in recent times. Rahm's won here twice, of course. Rafa was runner-up behind Rahm in 2019 and then went on to win a couple of years later. So those players who've shown an aptitude for the course may well be a good starting point. I think if you boil it down, make birdies and eagles, keep the card as clean as possible, and see if anyone can actually keep up with John Rahm and keep on his coattails this week. I mean, we can't ignore Rahm. I haven't backed him, and you know, if anyone wanted to go out and back him at 2-1, 9-4 maybe, then it's up to them, I guess. For me, that would be an all-in job. It would be every point that week would have to go on John Rahm. And it just doesn't feel overly exciting to me. He's undoubtedly the most likely winner. 3 points from 4 at the Ryder Cup, unbeaten at the Ryder Cup as well. So playing some good stuff. I think the thing we've got to look at is he was second to halfway in 2021 and he was the long odds-on favourite at that point as well, and then just drifted away over the weekend. So it can happen. He's not absolutely nailed on from the second he starts here, and we know the vagaries, particularly on low-scoring tests around the DP World Tour circuit, that strange things can happen. So let's hope that something odd happens this week and John Rahm does get beaten. Anyway, I've backed 5 each way chances to take him on. I'll rattle through them quickly because I know time's pushing on, and then I'll bring you guys in. Adrian Ause I've backed at 50-1. He probably should have backed this or won this back in 2021. It's a very generous drop for Rafa Cabrera Bayo on the 72nd hole, and then lost the playoff to Rafa, and he was searching for his first title at the time, and you know, you could be excused for not quite getting over the line. He's since won on home soil. He won the Catalunya Championship the following year. I think if there's a player that could push Rahm all the way, then that could be Adrian Ause. 4 from debut in 2019, second obviously the year after that I said, or the start after. Arrives here after a decent 14th place finish in Scotland last week. That's a new personal best at the Dunhill Links. Been putting well. I think what we've seen last week is that there's been an improvement on his long game. And that's really where Adrian Ause has been struggling over the last few months. After a relatively good start to the season, kind of gone off the boil with his long game. Opened with a 64 at Carnoustie on Thursday. And you don't do that around Carnoustie unless you're striking the ball reasonably well. So happy to take a chance on Adrian Ause. Also Grant Forrest 66-1. He was in contention last week, one off the lead heading into the final round. Now, he had to play Carnoustie, whereas Matt Fitzpatrick and some of the other guys near the top were playing some of the easier courses, St Andrews and King's Barnes. So it was no surprise, really, to see him drift down a bit. Finished tied 10th in the end, but fairly solid nonetheless. And we know he can go low. Shot 24 under to win the Hero Open at Fairmont back a couple of years ago. Scoring well with late as well. 21 birdies at the K Club for a tied third finish. 10 birdies, 2 eagles in the first 2 rounds last week at the Dunhill Links. And third here back in 2021. And 5 eagles in his 4 rounds then. So I think Grant Forrest will like this. I think he can contend and get himself into an each-way place or potentially better this week. Rikuo Hoshino I've backed, or Rikuo Hoshino, if I try and pronounce his name slightly better, 80-1. And I think he could take some inspiration from Ryo Hitsutsune's win in France last month. 6 times a winner on the Japanese tour, getting closer to a breakthrough at DP World Tour level now. 6th at Razzle Kaima, 3rd at the BMW International Open, 7th more recently at the Irish Open, 75th in the race to Dubai. So that's his card sewn up for me. Just a big effort now, and he could well make the Earth course in a month's time. And he finished 2nd last time out, back on the home tour, the Tokai Classic. He comes here in some decent form, and I think he could play well. Rikuo Hoshino, 80-1. Final 2, Shubhankar Sharma, 90-1. Real eye-catcher at this year's Open Championship. He finished 8th in the end. 7th at the Irish Open more recently. Bit down the field last week. He'd lost his chance, really, after a tough day to open at Carnoustie. Shot 66 in a windy King's Barn on Friday, so that was much better. Won the Joburg Open, won the Malaysian Open as well at 23 and 21 under par, so can get to the right kind of number to compete here. And was 3rd here in 2021 on his only attempt at this particular course. 2nd for strokes gained approach and 1st for strokes gained tee to green that week. So really got the measure of this from a tee to green perspective on his one and only start. My final one is Jeff Winter at 125-1 with 8 places. He could well continue Scandinavia's good run. We've seen the likes of Hovland over on the PGA Tour win a couple of times. Vincent Norman, Ludvig Ober all win in recent times on the DP World Tour as well, the last two. So the Dane is the kind of player that I think could pick up on that and push forward. 2nd in France recently, 10th at the Dunhill Links last week, very much in form. And very much overlooked in the market, I think, to be a strong 3-figure chance for this. 4th here in 2019, closed with a 63. Won on Spanish soil as well. He won the Mallorca Open back in 2021. A couple of rounds of 62 within that. And he's putting well. I mean, for me, Jeff Winter could really surprise a lovely 3-figure price this week. So fingers crossed with that one. Winter, Sharma, Hoshino, Grant Forrest, Adrie Arnaus, my 5. Barry, throw me some names.
I'm not going to do anything different. I'm just going to I have none of my own tips, so I'm just going to follow you this week, Paul. Just kind of a little bit behind with the late finish yesterday, and haven't really had much time to dig in. I really do like Arnaus and Winter. So those are the two I'm going to jump on. I'm just kind of dragging back the bets this time of year because it just gets a little bit wild. So, and I just feel like it's very easy for some of my money just to disappear without much merit. Or just, I just have a little less confidence in golf this time of year or the bets. So I'll follow a couple of yours for a bit of fun and see where we're at.
Brilliant. About you, Steve?
Well, independently, you'll know this. I came up with Andre Arnaus this morning.
It's a full house. Perhaps we'll have to do the Oberg Adrie Arnaus double across the three of us as well.
That's a shout. There we go. And then retire.
We have spoken about this for quite a while. Well, probably since April, when John Rahm won the Masters. And we did talk about then this curse the curse of the green jacket and players winning it and then not winning again for a chunk of time.
Mm.
The only player that actually bucked that, as regulars will know, was 2015. And of course, it was our friend Jordan Spieth. After DJ three-putted from, what should we say this on this podcast? Let's say 6 foot. It gets shorter every episode I mention it.
From 18 inches.
18 inches, yes. I just think, yeah, it's kind of... It's written in the stars that he wins this week. But can I be bothered to get involved? The other school of thought will be, if you leave it for 9 holes, he might start and his price will drift. Well, we've done that before and he fires like 6 birdies in his first 9 holes.
Yeah, and it's 2-1 on.
I don't know. The one that did grab me, Barry, and you were talking about him a lot last week over in St Andrews, was Sebastian Soderberg, who's firing some serious birdies in rounds at the moment, isn't he?
He was my last off the list last week, and then caused me an immediate meltdown when he got off to a fast start.
Because he fired in a crazy low round yesterday again, I noticed.
Yeah, 10 under. Yeah.
And I'm just looking. In October 2021, second at Valderrama, and 24th of October 2021, the week after, second at the Mallorca Golf Open. He also won an event on the Nordic Golf League back in 2018 in Spain. So do you know what? I might have a couple of pence each way on Sebastian Soderberg as well. Because I know how this podcast works. We don't mention the player one week and he goes and wins. So Soderberg and Arnaus for me.
Yeah. And hope that John Rahm doesn't win and everyone else stands a chance of making some money.
Just on that point about Rahm, I think the closest person that had won after the green jacket that wasn't Jordan Spieth was Adam Scott, 2013. He won a playoff event on the PGA Tour in August. So this kind of, I might have a cheeky tenner just straight on the nose on Rahm as well. But yes, should be a good event, I think. I wish you all of the best, chaps, in terms of your bets this week. Good luck.
Yeah, best of luck, boys.
You too, boys.
Best of luck to the listeners. If you've got this far and you're in Ireland or anywhere in the world, please send us a 5-star review. The other thing is, press that 5-star button on Spotify. We are getting very, very close to 500 5-stars on Spotify. So if you could do that for us and send in a review, we would really appreciate it. We'll be back next week. Zozo Championship for me. And what have you got, Paul?
It's the Estrella Damm and the Luthier Masters.
That's right.
At the Rail Club, the Golf Sotto Grande.
So you'll be desperately trying to find out some course information about that.
Indeed.
Something to look forward to. Right. Have a good week. I'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved. With all the stats and the tips and so much more, 'cause it's the golf betting system, the golf betting system.